to the Ohio Family on the Run podcast. We're your hosts, Scott.
And Christina.
This week is...
a paranormal episode.
Yeah, it is. We'll be talking about two places in Louisville, Kentucky, the legend of Sleepy Hollow Road, and our ghost hunt at Waverly Hills Sanitarium. But before we begin, what are we drinking tonight?
The Folgers 1850 12 Razor.
Again, because we have a bunch of coffee that we need to get back through. We do have an extra special coffee we'll be drinking for next week's episode, though. So we'll be interested on that. Also, this episode, we're going to be trying out a couple different things. So some things might sound or seem a little different. We're testing things out, so bear with us a little bit. So let me drink some of my coffee.
Still good.
And we are both wearing...
our Waverly Hills Sanitarium shirts.
Yep. I mean, we did our ghost hunt there, so we definitely had to get shirts for it. First off, we're going to start with the legend of Sleepy Hollow Road. So Sleepy Hollow Road is a winding, curvy road on the outskirts of Louisville, near the small town of Prospect. The two-lane road is heavily covered by a canopy of trees in many places. And at night, the only illumination is from your car's headlights. And since even the light of a full moon never reaches the pavement for most of the road. There are a couple legends that surround this eerie road. First is the legend of the mysterious black hearse. It first appears as headlights in your rearview mirror that is getting closer and closer. It gets right up on your bumper, then pulls alongside you. The legend also states that it forces you off the road and down the embankment. And that's a pretty deep embankment, because we did drive on this road.
It was very long.
It was very winding.
Never ending.
It seemed like it never ended. And that embankment really is steep. What makes this even creepier is that just beyond the end of Sleepy Hollow Road is the location of Harrod's Creek Cemetery.
It's kind of creepy.
And the second legend involves the bridge that crosses Hyde Creek before the modern bridge was built. A covered bridge once stood there. Legend has it that mothers once tossed unwanted, crippled, or otherwise burdensome babies into the creek, which eventually flows into the nearby Ohio River. According to the tale, when the moon shines down on the bridge from above and the night is still, you can still hear the screams and cries of the helpless victims, as well as the mournful wails of their doomed mothers. So we did drive Sleepy Hollow Road. It really wasn't super late at night when we went.
No.
It was still a little bit light out.
And it was a busy road, too.
We did find out it is a very busy road, especially when we were there. Did we encounter anything? No. Did we see a black hearse? Thankfully, no. However, like I said, it wasn't in the middle of the night. And even then, when we did drive it, the canopy that covers, really dense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even when there was still light, some light out, it was still really dark on that road. So I could imagine that being in the middle of the night,
especially like midnight.
Midnight, 2-3 o'clock in the morning, is probably extremely pitch black, which would just give it that eerie, sinister feeling. It sits out there. I would love to be able to go in the middle of the night just to kind of check it out, kind of get out and get a sense of feeling. But I could see, I didn't really see anywhere that to pull off, though. That was the problem, too. Yeah. I was kind of looking at places to pull off.
Especially a main road.
And there was a car that was pretty close behind us, following us the whole way. It wasn't a black hearse. I don't think it was a black hearse. I think it was a BMW. But who knows? Who knows? That is kind of the legend of Sleepy Hollow Road. With that, we just wanted to throw that little extra one in there. However, we want to get to the big one. And the big one is Waverly Hills, which we had been looking forward to for a long time. We also know that it is a ghost hunter's dream to go there. It is a destination for ghost hunters.
It's a paradise.
Yeah, it's basically a paradise. So before we get into this Waverly Hills itself, let's talk about why Waverly had to be built. and will give us some history of Waverly, what caused it, why it was built, what it became, some of the more common legends surrounding it, and then we'll get into our experiences that when we were there. So, Waverly Hills was built because of tuberculosis. Now, it doesn't seem like anything very much now, but you have to remember between 1895 and 1954, TB was huge, and it was a problem. And literally, 1 in 7 people died.
That's insane.
From it. It was a airborne, very contagious disease. However, when it first came out, the medical community didn't believe it was contagious. You know, they believed that it was actually genetic. And it took a long time for them to figure out that it was actually just contagious. So some of your symptoms that people would have from TB would be hacking, bloody coughs, pain in the lungs, and fatigue. And basically, if you got it, I think the mortality rate was around 60%. So it was very, very deadly. And, you know, I know a lot of people don't know. Some people do. You might not know about it too much. It kind of, I think we kind of understand it a little bit more now because of COVID. We understand how an epidemic can really ground society to a halt a lot. So I think we got kind of a little bit of a flashback from it. However, thankfully, our medical and science community is a lot more advanced. Yeah, a lot more advanced. Yeah, you're absolutely right, than back then. So TB, even though the outbreak was between 1895 and 1954, TB itself had been around for thousands of years. I did see that like there was instances or what they believe were cases back, you know, thousands of years ago, like in Egypt and Mesopotamia and stuff like that in Africa. So it's not like TB was a modern or new thing, but it wasn't even until 1882 that Robert Koch discovered that TB was very highly contagious and that it was not genetic. Now, he was a European doctor, and I believe, don't quote me on that, I think he was a German doctor. He might not have been, but that's what he believed. And then Dr. Edward Trudeau, he confirmed Koch's findings in 1895, and Trudeau was the first U.S. doctor to confirm Koch's discovery. However, sadly, both men were not believed by the medical community for many years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they both found out this is contagious, not genetic. However, the medical community still was saying, no, it's genetic, it's not contagious. Sadly, if they would have just listened and started doing some treatments, because both doctors kind of figured the best treatment was better hygiene. You know, it was a time frame where a lot of people didn't have access to fresh, clean water and, you know, just normal everyday hygiene that we take for granted today wasn't easily as accessible back then. And that was what was helped spreading this outbreak. So because of all these people being sick, and it's not just in the U.S., this is around the world, hospitals had to be built. Sanitariums were built left and right to just house people because they couldn't keep people in the regular community. We saw that and heard that if you went to your doctor and you were feeling sick and you went to your doctor and you told them, you know, they did the test and they said, oh, you've got TB because they found a way to test for it. They didn't have any treatment for it.
Mm-hmm.
But if your doctor said, oh, hey, you got TB, you had 24 hours to report to a hospital sanitarium. That was strictly for TB. If you didn't report or self-report, then the police officers would track you down and take you there themselves. That's how serious it was. Basically, Waverly Hills was originally a 2-story frame structure with a hipped roof and half timbering. So it was very,
very small.
Very small, very rudimentary. Construction on this structure began in 1908. and it was completed on July 26, 1910. The structure was originally built to safely house 40 to 50 TB patients. Not a whole lot. The outbreak was not as big yet, but it was about to get really big. Tuberculosis was a deadly disease at the time. Patients were secluded from the general population and placed in a location where they could rest, relax, and get enough of fresh air. Sanitariums were erected on high hills surrounded by quiet woodlands to assist patients recuperate in a peaceful environment. And it was basically, they were built on the hills because this allowed fresh air to flow through. And it was, one, more isolated. But again, back in that time frame, you didn't have air conditioning, you didn't have central air, you didn't have anything like that. And so you had to have the air, and we'll get into the reason why they wanted the air to be able to flow through the whole building. In Valley Station, Pleasure Ridge Park, and other portions of Jefferson County, Kentucky, tuberculosis was on the rise. The little TB clinic was overflowing, and it was clear that a much larger hospital was required to treat individuals suffering from the disease. Because tuberculosis was so infectious and reached epidemic proportions, people who were infected could not live and exist in the general community, like we said. Tuberculosis was not recognized as an airborne illness at the time. The newer and bigger hospital / sanitarium began construction in March 1924 and was completed on October 20th, 1926. It was one of the most contemporary and well-equipped institutions at the time, with a capacity of at least 400 patients. It was built so one end was facing the southeast where wind was always blowing, and it would come in and blow out the bad, contagious air out the northwest side of the building. Waverly Hills was a completely self-contained neighborhood. It had its own city replete with its own zip code. It possessed its own post office and water treatment plant, as well as growing its own fruits and vegetables, slaughtering its own meat, and maintaining many other essentials of daily living. Everyone at Waverly, including patients, nurses, physicians, and other staff, had to say their goodbyes to the outside world. You became a permanent resident on the hill once you moved to Waverly Hills. Despite this, many patients received visits from family and friends on visiting day. Which, that just blows my mind if it's just so contagious that they had actually visiting day.
Right.
The patients left Waverly once their stay ended and returned to the community. Or, if you were unfortunate, you went down the body chute. The institution was used as a TB hospital until 1961, when an antibiotic was discovered that successfully treated and cured tuberculosis, rendering the hospital obsolete. It was shut down and quarantined before being renovated. The structure was reopened in 1962 as a nursing home, which later became known as Woodhaven Medical Services, a geriatric hospital. And the state shut down Woodhaven Medical in 1981. Now, first of all, we will get into Woodhaven, because Woodhaven was not a good place.
Not pretty.
Woodhaven was a very horrible and horrendous, horrendous place. As a matter of fact, you know what? We'll just talk about Woodhaven. Woodhaven, after Waverly Hills shut its doors in 1961, they came in, they did everything. Woodhaven only had, I don't want to say clearance, but... or permits, but it was only allowed to use the first three floors.
Right.
Waverly Hills is a 5-story building. However, the fifth story is not very big. The fifth floor, that was mostly a children's ward. Woodhaven could only use the first three floors. They were not allowed to use the other two floors because the city / state did not know how structurally sound those other two floors were in order to house patients. It was in, I think it was the late 70s, that a fire marshal showed up to do their inspection. And if she did not do on accident, totally on accident, she got off on the wrong floor and got off on the fourth floor at Woodhaven / Waverly Hills. When she got off, she found patients on that floor, chained to beds, malnourished, in their own feces, in their own waste, and, you know, just horrible, horrible conditions, to the point that that started the process of Woodhaven actually being shut down. And it was finally shut down in 1981. And to think, you know, this place was atrocious. Absolutely horrendous. If she wouldn't have gotten off on the wrong floor, how much longer would they have been able to function? And how many more people? There's a lot of people that died. You know, who knows how many? Because, you know, from what we were seeing and reading was a lot of these people that they didn't have family.
They were, like, forgotten.
You know, yeah, they didn't have any family, any relatives visiting them, so they could get away with locking these people up. I mean, so everybody goes to Waverly Hills because you know about the sanitarium. You know, you want to do the ghost hunt of the sanitarium. Not many people know the true horrors that were endured during Woodhaven's time there. You know, as our guide, as one of the overseers that when we were there, one of the guides, I would say, as much good as Waverly tried to do, and Waverly tried to do a lot. They really did. You know, we're going to get into their methods and some of the practices they did. And, you know, it's easy to look back in, you know, 2022 and be like, oh my goodness, how could they ever think that would ever work? And there was a lot of people that died, but it was an epidemic, it was a pandemic, like, mm-hmm. like, you know, worldwide. So of all the good that Waverly tried to do, they really tried. Woodhaven was completely opposite. There are spirits from Woodhaven patients that are at Waverly as well, and they are considered the forgotten ones. Yeah, go there, try to find something about Waverly, but you may encounter somebody that went through a very horrible situation. And that's sad. Because if it wasn't in for that fire chief, or that fire marshal, and that was in the late 70s, mm-hmm. and that place opened up in 62 as Woodhaven.
So who knows how long it was going on?
Yeah, who knows? You know, I mean, it's just atrocious to me. It just angers me that people would treat somebody else that way. So, I don't want to say on to happy notes, because we are talking about Waverly Hills and TB outbreak. We are going to talk about some of the treatment methods that Waverly Hills, and it wasn't just Waverly Hills, but other sanitariums. So, keep in mind, during the TB outbreak, there was no cure. Yeah, they could test. Yeah, they could tell you had it. They had no cure for it. We got a cure for it now, but they didn't. So their best method and their best treatment that they had was good food, rest, and lots of fresh air. And that's why the sanitariums were built on hills. The fresh air to flow through. That building is an open-air building. There's not really any doors. There's no windows covering a whole lot. You got the sunroom and the solarium. Like, they would push people outside in beds, in chairs, set them outside. And you'd get at, like, sun 12, 14, 16 hours a day and get fresh air, even in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, men, women, children, they didn't, that was their thing, is get fresh air. Fresh air is supposed to help the lungs, which was what they called heliotherapy or sun treatment. And that was used in the treatment of TB of the glands, bones, joints, perineum, skin, eyes, urinary tract, and others. You know, they believe sunbathing helped kill the bacteria that caused TB. Did it?
No.
Not really. Could it have helped? Maybe. Did it fully cure you? No. So, the way Waverly Hills is set up is the five floors. You take out the fifth floor because that's mostly the children's ward. This is mostly just children up there. Children were on other floors, too. But that floor was mainly just only for children. And small, small children, because they had were like the babies and stuff. So the way that they believed, this is another disturbing way, but I get how they designed it. The worse off you were, the higher the floor you were on. So if you're on the second, you're doing pretty good. In order to be on the second floor, they had their main dining area, which is where we actually met everybody. That's where we all met. You meet up in their main cafeteria. And it was really big.
Very big.
And you had to be able to walk there by yourself, sit down, no coughing. You just couldn't show any signs of anything. If you couldn't do that, then they moved you to the second or to the third floor. If you didn't meet the criteria for the third floor, then you were on the fourth floor. And the fourth floor was the floor you really didn't want to be on. Fourth floor meant you're most likely not going to come back from this. So the way that they did that is they wanted for morale. They didn't want you seeing your buddy hacking and coughing and dying, you know, hacking up along next to you, because that's not good for morale. So they tried to keep everybody in good spirits. So kind of with that, we'll throw in the one thing that is most commonly known about Waverly Hills
is body shoot.
The body shoot. Absolutely. Everybody's heard it. If you know of Waverly Hills, then you've heard of the body shoot. Now, the body chute itself is a 550-foot-long tunnel that's going from the sanitarium down the hill to Dixie Highway, which was down to the railroad. It was originally built and used to bring supplies up from the local community because it just made it easier. Because there were stairs and they had like this pulley cart system and they could just pull it up. A lot easier than driving all the way up. After a while, when TB was really big and people were dying at an alarmingly high rate, the doctors at Waverly decided, you know what? It's really not good for morale if we keep having hearses every day, all day long, pulling up in front of the front doors where everybody can see it. So they realized we can take the bodies to the morgue, and from the morgue, the body chute is right down the hallway. And you can put the bodies on the body chute, send them down to the trains, and get them out of there. Nobody has to see it. And let's keep in mind, this morgue had, I think, what? One, two, three, four. I think six.
Six of them.
Six, I don't want to say coolers, but six, I don't know what they're called.
Like drawers or something?
Yeah, the body drawers. Everybody knows. If you've seen any crime show or...
I think there were three on each.
Yeah, and they had like... Yeah, so it's where the bodies go. But at its peak, at the highest point, Waverly Hills was having 25 people die a day. That's more than 1 an hour. That's insane.
That is insane.
So you can't sit there and see 25 hearses pulling up in a day. That would be demoralizing. So I kind of get it. It's a little disturbing. the exact number of people dying at Waverly is not fully known, unfortunately. The records that were for Waverly Hills accidentally after Waverly Hills closed down in 1961, the records were moved to downtown Louisville, and a flood destroyed the records. There is a guarantee, you know, they know that at least 10,000 people died, and there's speculation of up to 100,000. Now, how many, we don't know.
No.
So we talked about the heliotherapy. Let's talk about the two surgeries. And this is if you got to the fourth floor. Because at this point, if you're on the fourth floor, you're not going to leave Waverly. The only way you're leaving Waverly is down the body chute. So the first one that they did... Well, before we get into that, let's describe the operating room. The operating room for this was on the fourth floor. And it was located where?
So at the end of the fourth floor?
It was at the very end in a very small area. And they built that operating room in the spot for a specific reason. The operating room itself was small. Two operating tables, the overhead operating lights, is able to work on two patients at a time, and a small recovery room on the opposite side of it. They had an x-ray room right there and a labs person to do whatever they needed. Yes, the operating room had windows. Now, that sounds very weird for most people nowadays, because who goes into an operating room now and sees a window? You don't normally see a window in an operating room. The reason why Waverly Hills had an operating room with windows is because the anesthetic back then was ether. So ether, it's very powerful, and it's not an exact science. So giving ether to patients, if you gave them too much, you're going to kill them. If you didn't give them enough, they're going to wake up during surgery. Also, the problem with ether is ether will affect the doctors and nurses as well. So the windows are there to allow fresh air for the doctors and nurses don't pass out from the ether being used on the patients. You don't want to be in the middle of a surgery and your doctor passes out because of the anesthetic is used on him too. Also, the reason why the operating room was built on the end is because ether is also highly flammable. And those overhead lights get really hot.
Mm-hmm.
So the belief is really weird, kind of twisted the way that they thought about this. But again, I get it, is if that were to happen, if the ether caught fire and exploded, that room could go up, have an explosion in that room, and it's not going to kill anybody. It's not going to go anywhere else to any other floors. It's going to stay contained there. It's going to kill two doctors, four nurses, and two patients. It's a sad thing to think about. It's a disturbing thing to really think about, that their thought was, well, hey, it blows up. We only are killing eight people instead of 400. Again, not saying it's a perfect method,
right?
But I do kind of get it. It's disturbing. So there was two procedures done in this operating room. They're not good procedures.
No.
They're, let's just describe them. Okay. The first one that they would do was the artificial pneumothorax, which is a method of treatment which consists of introduction of air into the pleural cavity or between the coverings of the lung, which collapses the diseased area and hopefully leading to a complete recovery. Which basically that means is they cut a hole in the side of your body, and they stick a tube in there, and they deflate the lung. And they try to keep the lung deflated because, hey, if there's no air, nothing can grow. It should kill the bacteria. Was it successful?
Not really.
No. Do we look back on it and say, dear Lord, that's scary? But again, they were trying new stuff. They were trying anything to keep people alive. Most of the time, it did not work. So if you had that procedure and it didn't work, which most of the time it didn't, they would eventually come to you and say, hey, you have 1 week to live. You can just die peacefully with this horrible disease and this painfully deflated lung now, because I gotta tell you that they probably were not in it comfortable, and be guaranteed to be dead in a week, or we got this one other surgery that we can try. Now, of course, you're willing to try anything for hope. So, they did the second surgery for most people. They did what's called a thoracoplasty. I'm probably saying that wrong. And that was the surgical removal of numerous rib bones from the chest wall in order to collapse a lung. During the time when this procedure was widespread, the average patient needed 7 to 8 ribs removed.
Jeez.
Most surgeons chose to remove only a few ribs at a time. Thus, patients had to go through numerous surgeries before their thoracoplasty was completed. That sounds extremely painful, because they would cut you completely open and remove ribs.
Multiple times.
Did that surgery work?
Not really.
What was the mortality rate?
95%.
95%. That's not success.
No.
That's mortality. Going through that second surgery, you only had a 5% chance to live. That is insane. Now, you were talking about a disease of the lungs, and they are removing ribs for whatever reason that they came to was that was a solution. I said, very, very unfortunate. They were trying. They were trying anything. They did do some electric shock therapy. I'm not even really sure why.
I think they more did that in Woodhaven.
Was it more Woodhaven?
Okay. Uh-huh.
Okay. Maybe I was reading that differently. Okay. That seems more likely. But there is that report of that little girl in the electroshock therapy room.
Hmm.
So, I don't know. There I am just dropping coffee all over everything again. Because I got a hole in my mouth.
Like every time.
Every time. Every week I get coffee all over my notes. Oh well. Definitely get used. So, we have a couple different things else to talk. We're going to talk about some rumors myths, legends of Waverly. Which one do you want to talk about first?
502.
You want to talk about 502.
Oh, that gave me the creeps.
The infamous room 502. Okay. I like 502. Obviously, room 502 is on the fifth floor, which is what?
The children's wing.
Okay. So, room 502. Here's the legend, and then we're going to give you fact. The legend states that a nurse hung herself in room 502 because, and there's a couple theories, the most common belief or myth is she hung herself because she was got pregnant out of wedlock by a doctor. Is that true?
No.
No. First of all, did a nurse hang herself? Possibly. There was a nurse that was found hung. However, it was not in room 502. Room 502 is what? What's for 502?
Like a bathroom laundry room?
Yeah, it's a bathroom with a shower. With a shower in it. She was not found in 502. She was found outside of 502, hanging from a light by one of the maintenance workers. Now, that is a fact. That is a completely proven fact that she was found outside room 502 by a maintenance worker. He got off the elevator, and there she was. Did she hang herself? Nobody fully knows. There is also a theory that possibly she was murdered, that somebody hung her. Is that true? We don't know that. Did she hang herself, or was she murdered? Who knows? A lot of people believe or feel that she wouldn't kill herself if she has dedicated her life to helping people and she's working on the children's ward and she hangs herself on the children's ward. And the reason why we say dedicate is because it wasn't just patients. Once you went to Waverly, if you were a patient, you couldn't be in the community. Same with nurses, doctors, janitors, housekeeping, maintenance men, orderlies. They couldn't go back home either. They were helping, and people understood that they were helping and praised them and were like, hey, you know, thank you for doing this. But at the same time, the community shunned the hospital and all those employees as well because of the simple fact is you don't know if they've got it or not. Because there was a lot of staff that didn't have it when they got there, but because of being around everybody so often and so long, they developed it. You know, they caught TB. That's why Waverly Hills became a self-contained, basically small town. That's why they had the fields for their own meat and fruits and veggies and their own post office, because it was its own town and had to be. You weren't going to get off your shift at, you know, you're not going to work your 8 to 10 or 12 hour shift and go home to your house outside of Waverly and act like it's nothing. It was, if you were going to work there, you lived there. And, you know, so, I mean, we look at our hospital staff, you know, we look at our medical workers during the pandemic of COVID and how
a lot of them couldn't go home
and just how they just dedicated themselves and did just sacrifice their personal life and their families' lives basically to help take care of people.
Didn't a lot of them have to stay in a hotel room?
Some of them stayed in hotel rooms. Some of them chose to because they didn't want to get close to their family or
stayed
fear.
In the garage.
Stayed in different buildings, you know, stayed. You know, there was even, you know, how many of that we saw of from some cities and states that teams of hospital staff that had extra staff would go to other major cities that needed help.
Cleveland Clinic went to New York.
Yeah, Cleveland Clinic. I mean, the dedication that those men and women did, you know, from the nurses and doctors to surgeons to just everybody down, you know, orderlies, housekeeping. You know, it's easy to thank the doctors and everything and the nurses, and they did a wonderful job. Even, you know, we can look at it. I think what makes it easier for me to understand this more and get a grasp of what these men and women back in during this outbreak was, is watching this outbreak that we just did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the nice thing is now we have mobile phones. We have cell phones. You know, we can FaceTime family and friends. We have laptops. We have computers.
You can talk to people. You can call people. You can FaceTime them. And it still doesn't, and I'm not saying that that makes it easy, because it's not. They didn't have cell phones. They couldn't just call up a loved one and say, hey, I'm missing you. You know, I love you. They had to write a letter. That was their way. Maybe a phone, if the person that you're trying to get a hold of even had a phone.
Right.
Because it wasn't like it was common.
Especially in the 1830s.
Yeah. I mean, more and more people were getting them, but it wasn't like it was like this common, oh, everybody's got a phone. You know, and let's keep in mind another thing. Let's just put this out there. Keep in mind also with Waverly Hills, say you were a single parent. You contracted TB. You have a couple kids. Your kids go with you to the hospital. Even if they don't have it, nobody is going to take care of them. Not since you got TB, so you're going to the hospital and your kids are now around it. So, I mean, it's very scary. It's very, very scary. So, Room 502, one little story about that from our ghost hunt that was very intriguing was our guide went up there. We did a tour. We did a big tour of the building, and then we got to do our individual ghost hunting. We chose to go on the tour. You didn't have to. You could go on, do whatever you wanted. But we wanted to find out more history, more knowledge, the best places to go. So anyways, we get up to Room 502. He goes and stands in the corner by the room and has everybody gathering kind of around him. And during the whole process of, you know, and we've been to a lot of places already throughout Waverly Hills and talked, and he gave us info. And everybody was almost right on top of him. I think everybody was standing at least like maybe 2 feet back from him. The closest person to him was always at least 2 to 3 feet back from him. We get up there, Room 502. He hasn't said a word. He hasn't told us about the true story, about the actual facts about Room 502. You know, so those of us that knew, I mean, most everybody there was for the 6-hour ghost hunt. So everybody kind of knows all the legends and myth and lore. But he stood in the corner, and then everybody gathered, but nobody gathered around him. Until he pointed out, we didn't think about this until he pointed it out. And now this man's been working there for what, 20 years?
Yeah.
He's been there for 20, he's been a guide for 20 years. And the first thing he says is, I want you all to take a look at how you're all standing. And so you kind of look around and nobody is within 5-10 feet of him. I mean, I think the closest person was maybe 8 feet. And everybody was a semicircle kind of around him. It was an automatic semicircle. He didn't tell us to stand that way. Nobody, you know, I don't know why. He said right above in that middle big empty space where nobody was standing, that's the light that the nurse was hanging from. And he said, nobody, every tour he takes, nobody steps into that spot. He has never had a group where they have come closer. I don't know why that is. I don't know if it's just a subconscious thing, but I'm telling you, this our whole group was basically on top of him the whole night during the tour, except for that one spot. And then it was almost like a circle below where that light was, like where nobody was standing. You didn't even notice until he pointed it out. And then you're like, oh my gosh, that's insane. It's spooky. It's very spooky.
Very creepy.
Very creepy. But I don't know. If anybody has a theory on that, please let us know. You know, we got a couple. I mean, maybe it's just a subconscious thing. What was your theory on it?
A sense.
Yeah, that's right.
You like were saying, a sixth sense.
Like everybody kind of just
knew.
Kind of knew but didn't know. Yeah, subconscious. Knew but didn't know. So yeah, that's room 5. That's room 502. Now, we did do an EVP session up there. It was really hard to really get a good EVP session on the fifth floor because, one, the night we went, it was thunder, it was lightning out and raining some, which did give us good stuff later on in the evening. But, however, on the fifth floor, they had, on some of the windows and some of the areas, they had
night bags.
Plastic, the plastic, the hard plastic. And so that was really snapping in that wind, and it was really hard to pick up anything. But we did there. We have our EVP. I think we went through. We didn't really hear anything on it. Do you want to talk about the sisters, Lois and Aubrey? Or Audrey? Is it Audrey or Aubrey?
Audrey.
One of the other most famous spots is, and I actually didn't even know about this until we found out about it, is there's two rooms, and on the second floor.
Yep.
I'm getting kind of chills when I think about this. So, the two rooms right next door to each other were where two sisters, Lois Higgs and Audrey Higgs, and they both contracted TB. Now, Audrey got TB, beat it, left the hospital, got it again, and beat it a second time. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to beat it once, you got a 40% chance. What are the odds of getting it again and beating it a second time? That's got to be astronomical.
Right?
Her sister obviously contracted it. She beat it, got out, was pregnant, then contracted it again. Unfortunately, Lois Higgs did not survive. Now, she did give birth, and this is a really sad section, because she gave birth. She was, 23 when she gave birth?
Yeah.
So, yeah. She was 23 when she gave birth, and the only way that she ever got to really see her son, she never got to hold him, she never got to play with him. Her family would bring him up, and they would hold him up for she could see out the second floor solarium, and she could wave and blow kisses, and that's how she got to interact with her son. And she died when he was 5 years old, and she was 28, and she died in 1956. Her sister, Audrey, died in 1996 at 75 years old, and their family still visits.
Mm-hmm.
They have relatives that still come to Waverly. I don't know. Before we go on and talk about more in depth of some of the things that we experienced, Mother's Day was not too long ago. What do you think? How do you feel about that? Like, about never being able to hold your child?
It's rough. That's a rough experience. Not being able to be there for your child. Or ever getting a chance to hold your child.
You don't get to see their first steps. You don't get to do anything. That's got to be because he was 5 when she passed. So by the time he's 5, he's going to start remembering a lot of things. Mm-hmm. He had to have those are deep-seated, deep-set memories that he is going to remember that. When they're a baby, right. You're not going to remember anything from your baby, most likely. At the age of 5, you're going to start remembering. So he's got to be with that the rest of his life. I'm pretty sure he's passed away now.
I think he has because his family actually comments on Facebook.
Oh, okay.
Because Lois just had a birthday. She would have been 94.
That's just so sad. That's heartbreaking. We did find out that the sisters, who'd they love?
Elvis Presley.
They loved Elvis. So they do at one point, they do during the 6-hour ghost hunt, they do a music experiment. They do a couple different experiments throughout the night. So the music experiment is they're going to play a couple songs, and they're going to play older songs to kind of get the activity and to get, the spirits and whatnot to react. They played some really old songs, and then they play a sound, and the sound isn't heard by human ear. You can't hear it, but the speakers are pushing it out, and it's supposed to magnify the energy in the air. I did go, we did for the music. I had our EVP. I didn't do our EVP. Sorry. For the music, I did the K2 meter. I used our K2 meter and my phone, and we'll post some of that. We'll definitely post some of the video of that because I got the most activity in the sisters' rooms before the music event and then during the music event. I think some of the songs, they played Summertime by Sam Cooke.
Mm-hmm.
They played, was it Down to the River to Pray?
I think so.
I'm not sure which version. I think they played the Alison Krauss. I'm not sure.
It sounded like that.
I might put that on our thing. And then they played Can't Help Falling in Love by Elvis Presley. And I got some activity throughout all of it. And I really... Okay, I don't want to get into that part.
No.
I want to get into that part later. Because that part was... we're going to get into that part.
Because you're right there.
Because we're right there. And I'm just, excited for this part. So, this is on the second floor. This was one of my biggest interactions, I was not only, we were just getting, K2 meter was going crazy, but I got to see shadow people. It's a common shadow person that the guide says he's seen. Now, he has seen the shadow so many times. He's not sure if it's an intelligent or a residual haunt. And if you're not sure, the difference between an intelligent haunt and residual is, think of kind of like a movie or a TV show. It just keeps repeating the same thing over and over. It could be the same time. Not necessarily has to be the same time of day. Sometimes it is the same time of day. But it's the same movements, and it's just like an after image. And it's just like on a repeat. You can't interact with it. If you do interact, it's not going to know that you're there. It's just going to keep doing the same thing. Whereas in an intelligent haunt is something that is fully aware. It can interact with you. It doesn't necessarily mean it will, but there is a high chance, you know, it's aware, it knows what it's doing, and can interact if it so chooses. So a couple other types of haunts, but we won't get into those. Those are the two common. Like I said, he has yet to make contact, really, with it. He kind of feels that it is a residual because the shadows do the same thing. You will see, like, the upper half, and it comes right out of, on the second floor, out of the kitchenette. There's a kitchenette, and if you look in the doorway, you'll see, like, the upper half of, like, a tall figure stick its head out a couple times, like, three times, and then you'll see a small shadow dart across, you know, and goes from left to right. It happens all the time the same way. Head darts out three times, shadow darts left to right. I saw it, and it didn't scare me, but I couldn't believe. I was like, oh my Lord. And there's a lady next to me. You have to understand, there's like 60 people ghost
hunting. Did you get goosebumps when it happened?
Oh man, it gave me goosebumps, and I was excited. My adrenaline was going on it, and I was like, you know, it's one thing to hear the stories, one thing to hear, oh hey, this person's experiences, but then you get to see it yourself. It blew my mind. Like, I was just like, I didn't just see that. And what's funny is, earlier in the night, I did see shadow people. Didn't really get any interactions. Never saw anything solid, but I did see a shadow people on the third floor. He did say there's a shadow person on the fourth floor that he has actually made contact with. And is, he believes, he is, I think, what was he called? The tall man? Mm-hmm. And he says he's like one of the forgotten ones from Woodhaven. But he said it took him a long time to actually get to make contact with him. So we didn't see that. We tried to see that. I'm telling you, second floor, crazy. One thing about Waverly, I don't know for you, and I'm not sensitive, extremely sensitive to different things. Like, some people are very sensitive or light mediums or even a heavy median. Mm-hmm. They're more sensitive stuff. I can walk into places, and this is something that I've had throughout my childhood. I can't really explain it. I'm sure maybe somebody that has more knowledge and expertise could explain it. I can walk in and kind of feel, like, the mood in a room. It's nothing fancy. But when we were in Waverly, there was just an overwhelming pressure. Not to the point where it bothered me or did anything, but it was a complete different change from being outside and then going inside the building and just feeling like just a physical pressure on the body. So I don't know. And I don't know how to really explain it. I'm not saying it was like an evil presence, because nothing is really evil at Waverly.
No.
There's nothing really evil there. No, not every haunting is evil. Most hauntings aren't. I don't know how you felt when you were there.
I got the creeps on 502.
Like, what do you mean creeps?
Like, I felt something.
Like, you felt like a presence around you?
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk about the story about the boys?
Oh, with the fourth floor door?
Yeah, I forgot about this story until just now. So, back in the day when, after Woodhaven left and the people bought Waverly Hills and they were going to turn it into kind of a ghost hunt thing or try and renovate it and whatnot, They were opening it up to the general public. It was $5 a pop. $5, you just go into the building. But at that time, Waverly Hills had all the windows were covered in plywood. So it's not like they're open like they are now. And they just, all they had is like two security guards out front. That's it. And they would let people in, take your $5, go for a couple hours, then you leave. They'd go lock up the building. So one night, security guards are leaving, getting ready to leave. They're locking up and they hear banging noise coming from inside Waverly Hills. Their first instinct was, oh man, we accidentally locked somebody inside, which has happened.
Mm-hmm.
It's unfortunate because it wasn't very organized then. It was just a quick way to make some money. So they go in and they track down the source of the noise, and it's on the fourth floor. And it's coming from the fourth floor door. And we were standing at this door. And this door is solid metal. Solid metal door. There was some teenage boys that had broke in. They broke off some plywood. And I think they had a hatchet.
Yeah, they had a hatchet.
They had a hatchet. So they cut into some plywood and crawled into the building. They were doing things on their own. Apparently they didn't want to pay the $5. So anyways, they are in the building. Security guards go up. They're at the window because the doors have a window in them. There's no glass or anything, but you can see through. And the boys are freaking out.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, they won't let us out. They're screaming at them. They won't let us out. They won't let us out. They won't let us out. And the security guard's like, who are you talking about? What are you talking about? And they're like, they're not letting us out. They're not letting us out. They can't open the door. And the security guard, and it's hard to describe this, but the security guard just basically took one finger and pulled the door open. And they showed us. Those doors have no locks on them.
Yeah.
There's no knob. There's no latch. There's nothing to lock on that door. You hook your finger and pull it open and it slides open easily. There's nothing that could be preventing that door from opening and holding them in there. And when you look on the back side of that door, on the side that they were, the banging sound are these deep gashes in the door because they were using the hand axe on it. And they're still there. Yet, like, it was just deep, deep gouges where they were trying to break through. So something was preventing them from pushing open that door. That door doesn't open inward to them. The door opens outward into the stairwell. So if they're pounding on it in that forward motion, that door's going to come open. What held them there? I don't know. Do I believe some spirits maybe held them there? Ah,
karma.
Don't trespass.
Karma then.
Don't trespass. What security guards do you need? You got a sanitarium full of ghosts. You don't make a man.
Nope.
And that was one of the things there is, you know, they had some rules there. And one of the main rules is don't provoke and antagonize them, you know, which is always, that's our belief as well. You don't need to provoke and antagonize. Just have respect. You know, they're there. Don't be disrespectful to them. You get a lot of activity. There's a lot of activity. K2 meter, we'll put some of that up. The place was amazing. I want to go back.
It's definitely better than seeing it on TV.
Oh, man, yeah, you can watch it on TV and be like, oh, that's really cool. But being in person, it's... What was your sense when you first saw the... Like, when we were driving up?
I was like, oh, my gosh. I had the chills going up there.
Yeah, because you go up that winding road, and then you get to the top, and then, boom, there's Waverly. I think for me, it was the excitement.
Adrenaline, because we couldn't sleep before.
No, so unfortunately we did not stay the whole night, which was a bummer. We left about 3:30 in the morning because that was on Saturday night. The race was Saturday morning, and the whole plan for the after the race was go eat and then go home, take a nap, sleep before we get up and go to Waverly at midnight because we had to be there at 11:45.
11:30.
Yeah, unfortunately we couldn't sleep. We tried.
I think we were too excited.
We were too excited. And I know it was bad. I know that I was like, maybe it's just me. But then when you literally, I hadn't even said anything. And you're like, I can't sleep. And I know if you can't sleep, there's a problem because you fall asleep.
Instantly.
Anywhere. So I think we were just really excited and looking forward to it. Anyways, we were just so exhausted. Mm-hmm. Which kind of is a bummer, because I really wish we could have stayed. I think we'll go back. We definitely have more haunts in our future. I know we want to do some here in Ohio.
Yes.
I think we might do a paranormal episode, just some of the, you know, legends of Ohio in some areas. Maybe. We'll see what we can do. I'm not really sure.
We need to get to Ohio State.
Oh, I know we want to go to Ohio State Penitentiary. The Mansfield in Mansfield.
I need to find out what my president of my group is doing.
Yes. Waverly Hills. We did do some EVPs throughout. There was a couple things. We went over them again tonight with the EVPs. I think we're going to keep going over a couple of them. I didn't really get a whole lot. I think there was a couple places where we got something that we're not fully sure what it was. I think, what did I say?
The morgue.
The morgue.
Had a couple.
So the morgue, there was a couple noises in the morgue. And where I had put the, you know, I set the audio recorder down on one of the gurneys. And then I literally sat in a chair 10 feet, you know, I was at least 10, 15 feet away from it. And there was a couple spots where you hear like a tap. And it sounded like something tapped the recorder. And there's nothing. This isn't an enclosed room. There's nobody around. Nobody in the room. Nobody around me. I'm not touching anything. There's nothing loose on the table. There's nothing even close to touching it. And I didn't hear anything when I was recording it, but we heard it tonight when we were like, wait, what is that? It sounds just like something just taps
right. The
recorder. So, I don't know. We're gonna delve into that. Anybody have any theories? We did find out that the audio recorder that I was using is very sensitive. Like, very sensitive.
Picks up everything.
And that thing picks up freaking everything, which was really nice. So that's good on that one. So we know that at that. Anything that you want to talk about, Waverly? Tell me if you're going to say something that you really, really enjoyed.
Just the overall experience, like being there in the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. What'd you think of the body shoot?
Creepy.
It was a little. That I got a really strong feeling of like, not foreboding, but like the pressure was even bigger there.
You saw that one girl on her tour walk down.
Yeah, and then I did an EVP in there. Well, I did an EVP. I stayed at the top, and there was another group that was down.
Yeah.
But they were down halfway, and I could see them because they were using their K2. I was using the K2 in the EVP, and I think they had dowsing rods, too. They had the spirit rods, so they were kind of lit up a little bit. But we got sound from that.
Yeah.
From I wasn't asking any questions, but they were. And I don't know if they heard it, but I picked up something on our audio.
Yeah.
On that. I think I want to listen to that some more.
One girl, when we were on a tour, she said she felt like she was being pulled.
Yeah, there was the girl. A lot of people were getting a lot of different things. I was a little worried when I was like, oh, there's 60 people going around this place. You know, how much of them are going to be like really kind of serious about this as we wanted to be?
Most of them were serious.
Absolutely. Most of them were very serious about it. Most people had their own equipment. Like, they were there with
someone
their friends.
Someone had a REM pod.
I know. I want a REM pod so
bad.
Or
the GoPro thing. They use a full spectrum on it.
Yeah, I want to get a full spectrum. Unfortunately, we had a video camera and it has infrared, but it got messed up where the audio did not record. Ugh. And that has me very upset. But I want a full spectrum. I want to find a way to put a full spectrum for that camera. I'm sure there is, because it's a 4K camera. The camera's really nice, but the audio not recording really, really has me angry. Because we recorded that whole tour. Not the whole tour, but him talking about room 502. You know, I got him talking it on video. You can see him. You just can't hear him. What else do you have for Waverly?
I think that's all I have on there.
Do you want to go back?
Yeah. I learned my lesson. No, be scared of the no lights.
Oh, yeah. So let's throw this in there. So he tells you, the guy tells you, you don't need a flashlight. And he said it's better if you don't have a flashlight because your eyes will adjust. There's enough light coming from outside, even in the middle of the night, that it's enough. Your eyes will adjust, and there's nothing on the floors. You're not going to trip over anything, and you're more likely to see something if you're not keep turning your flashlight on, because the flashlight, your light, you know, it's going to blind you for a second. When you turn it off, you won't be able to see, so you're more likely to miss something. Yeah, you were very scared of being without a light, which was very frustrating at some points. But it's your first ghost hunt, main ghost hunt, and, I mean, besides Gettysburg, but your first real big one. So I think you just got to get used to it. I think you'll use more practice. He suggested, I wasn't going to do this, but I thought about it for about a split second. But he suggested, oh, if you go do the morgue, to get into one of the body containers.
The bottom one.
To get on the bottom one. Lay in there with, you know, your head towards the front and your feet sticking out just like they would, because you'd have your toe tag. He said, and close the door and have your friends come back in about 15, 20 minutes to get you back out. And I'm like, he said, you will experience a lot. And I thought about it, but then I was like, that might get to me. It's a little too claustrophobic for me on that
one.
Yeah. Maybe. Anyway, anything else you wanna spend about, you know, Sleepy Hollow Road or Waverly Hills?
I think of.
We had fun at Waverly. I definitely want to go back.
Oh, well, there was that park that we didn't get to, the cave.
What cave?
The one in Tom Sawyer Park.
Oh, where it's haunted, but you can't get back to it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a bummer. There's other haunted places in...
Oh, yeah, there is.
Kentucky. We're going to find some more. We're going to go on another ghost hunt soon. I don't know when, but I think we're going to start looking at some, coming up with some more ideas. Because that was a blast. We just got to fix the camera situation. Well, that's it for this episode where we did our paranormal. Next week, we're doing... Oh, man, next week. Hey, be in for a rough ride next week, because we're going to do our distillery episode, and it's going to be very intriguing, because we're going to do something along throughout the episode that it could get very weird very fast. We just wanted to say thanks for listening to the Ohio Family on the Run podcast. Man, if you like what you just heard, you know, we hope you'll share us with your friends and colleagues. Send a shout out, share us, share the link, follow us. You know, leave us a positive review. Check us out on Instagram, Ohio Family on the Run, and Twitter at @FamilyOn_the_Run.
Or send us an email at ohfamilyontherun@gmail.com.
And I'm telling you, contact us. You know, if you got spooky stories, you have your own personal experiences with the paranormal, man, we want to hear them, don't we?
Oh, yes.
Man, yeah, we want to hear them.
We have suggestions for equipment.
Yeah, if you got ideas for different types of equipment, you know, we won't get into the spirit box this episode, so trust, yeah, we just won't get it. You know, we have our K2 meter and stuff like that. Also, if you have any suggestions or ideas for future episodes, let us know. Until next week, this is Scott.
And Christina.
Good night.